Ladies and gentlemen, witches and worms, welcome to the Most High Show. I'm your host, Sarah with an H, and joining me in the studio tonight is John, also with an H. And John, why do our names have an H in them?
Apparently because we're going to hell.
We are going to hell. Yeah. John is a person in recovery and a karaoke aficionado. But he is a friend of the show, and we are excited and honored to have him on with us tonight. So welcome to the Most High Show.
Thank you.
Welcome to the Most High Show, a show about recovery, spirituality, and all that. Produced, posted, and hosted by people in recovery who have strength and hope and want to share with you. If you or someone you love is suffering, we want you to know you are not alone. This is the Most High Show.
Thank you.
So why don't you...
It's good to be here.
Why don't you go ahead and tell us a little bit about yourself, your recovery journey.
Okay. So I'm John with H. I'm a single father of three amazing, beautiful kids that make me a better man every single day. I'm also a person in long-term recovery, and what that means to me is it's been 5 years and 8 months since opiates ran my life. And my recovery journey started with some shit that you would see out of a movie. Long story short, I was just a dude down bad that robbed a bank with a note. I didn't have a gun, so it was robbery by intimidation. 2 weeks later, they kicked my door and arrested me. So thanks to the Georgia Department of Corrections, my first 3 years of sobriety was forced, and it wouldn't have happened any other way because I had been an addict since like age 13, you know. I don't want to sound like cliche, but it started with like smoking pot in high school. And then, you know, I was doing Oxycontin when that was still a thing. So like I'm an OG opiate addict.
Purdue's biggest fan.
Yeah. So I was on pills for almost a decade. And then at the very end, living in Atlanta, slumming, it got really, really bad. 2-3 months, I got into heroin. And honestly, it was the slowest suicide you've ever seen. That's the best way I can describe myself. Mm-hmm. I didn't care about myself. I didn't care about anybody, including those people that I love the most. Overdosed multiple times. And then, you know, so what happened was my kids' mom, you know, they were, you know, my three kids, my wife at the time, they were still living in Cherokee County. Landlord calls me. He's like, hey, she hasn't paid rent in 2 months. Back then, before all this fucking inflation, it was $1,250 for like a nice house. So we owed him $2,500, even though I wasn't living there. So I was like, all right, you'll have it this Friday. That was on a Tuesday. And that Friday morning, I walked into the BB&T in Cobb County and I robbed a bank. You know, everybody thinks about it. I was just stupid enough to do it. And yeah, 2 weeks later, I went down. And then 6 months after that, I got sentenced to a 15-5. I did three off of good behavior. And I came home December 13th, 2021. So like that first 3 years of my recovery was incarcerated. You know, and, you know, like you said before, like there's every drug under the sun in prison, mm-hmm. you know, if not more. You know, because it's very profitable. So I avoided that because, number one, it was so expensive. Number two, you know, I just, like, that first year was rough. Like, it was a rough first year, not because of the time, but because I was, like, the journey of accepting everything that I had fucked up and who I had become. It was hard. It was really hard to deal with. So let me just clarify, as a parent, I'm sorry if, you know, you're my family and you're watching and this disappoints you, but the entire time I was incarcerated, I smoked weed, you know, because it was, you know, so when I say like I avoided drugs, that, yeah, like that's true. And I still count that, you know, but um, it was different, you know? Like, I don't know how to describe it. But when I got out, December 13th, 2021, that's when I started going to meetings and building a network. And then eventually I got a sponsor and I started doing the steps. So my journey is not your normal journey. And I know everybody says that. So if I miss anything, let me know. But I'm like,
yeah, I was there.
My ADD is kicking
in. Actually.
Yeah, she filmed the whole thing, actually. She was there. It's coming out in 2025.
So if you hadn't, you know, been arrested when you were, if you hadn't gone to prison when you did, do you think you would have ever, like, crowdsourced your way into recovery, or do you think your life would have gone in a completely different direction?
I would have killed myself. I believe that.
Like, on purpose, or just that's where it was headed with the way your lifestyle was?
That's where it was headed. Mm. Yeah, it was very... It was very not happy. It was like all things dark. That's what my life was. I'd lost my will to live.
Yeah.
You know, I woke up every day just to get high, and that was it. Mm. Anything else didn't matter. So to answer your question, that was a winded answer, but I would be dead. I truly believe that. Yeah.
And so are you the reason why BB&Ts no longer exist?
No. No.
Your $2,500 didn't put them out?
No. My little $3,000 didn't get them out.
Just had to ask. But you were in, you said you got out of prison in 2021 and you were there for 3 years.
Yep.
So you were there for COVID prison.
I missed that whole thing. I missed it. You know?
But
I'm sorry. I didn't suffer with y'all.
Well, they were saying that, like even, like, inside the prisons, it got really...
Oh, it was ridiculous. We had to wear masks, like, just to go to chow. All the work details shut down, which is a very... it's like, all right, so in the state of Georgia, you got state prisons, which is level 4s and 5s. They don't go anywhere. And then you got the other half, which are work camps. Go out Monday through Friday on a trash truck, on a landscaping detail, on, you know, whatever. It's like slavery. That's what it is. It's total slavery. But we loved it because, like, you get cigarettes and weed and, you know, whatever else. It's where all the contraband comes through. But that's not why it was so bad. Why it was so bad is because, like, you feel like a person when you're in there. Like, you go out from, like, 7 to 4, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. every single day. Like, your time just clicks by. So during the whole COVID thing, I say I missed it, but for, like, 3 or 4 months, there was, like, no motion, you know. Mm-hmm. Every prison in the state of Georgia was kind of shut down. It was wild. And I got vaccinated. I feel so shameful to say that. But, like, the reason I did is because, like, if you know me, I overthink shit. So they like, walked in one day and were like, hey, if anybody gets vaccinated, you get a $15 store back, which is, like, commissary. Mm-hmm. So, of course, like, all the idiots were like, yes, right now, right away. I didn't do it for the money. I did it because, like, I was like, is it going to hold me up with parole? Like, shit, my parole date's coming up soon. Just got pushed back anyways, but... Yeah, that's why I did it. It was like a random 2-minute tangent about
really,
vaccines.
Really
don't get vaccinated.
Detour.
It's probably going to be a lot of that.
Oh, boy.
I should be medicated.
Okay. We need to get a psychiatrist on the show right now.
We do.
But now you work in a recovery job.
I do.
So where do you work?
First of all, I never would have thought in a million years that I would ever work in recovery because I'm a selfish person. So, but no, I work at the Recovery Organization of Cherokee County. So that is The Rock.
And what is The Rock?
It's a recovery community organization, also known as the RCO. So our main initiative is to serve those in our community that are in recovery, whether that being just a safe and sober hangout on the weekends or a daily meeting thing or outreach. Like, what we really are is a resource hub. You know, people can walk in off the street. We can get them hooked up with an insurance partner that we have, get them to treatment, direct them. Like, for example, today, like, we had somebody crash there last night because he got misplaced from a treatment facility I won't mention in South Georgia. They shipped him up to SLA in Nashville. We got him a bus ticket to Atlanta, pay for an Uber. He crashed at the Rock last night, which we're not supposed to do, you know.
So let's talk about it publicly.
Yeah, so we're going to talk about it publicly because I'm an idiot, but like, you know, for like 4 or 6 hours in an emergency, we will do that. But this is just an example of like, you know, so he got there. We got him hooked up with Carter Treatment Center, and they went and picked him up, I think, about 12:30. You know, I took him and got a food box, some hygiene, bought him some breakfast, 3 packs of smokes, and sent him on his way. You know, and in a nutshell, that's what we do. When people ask me what I do, I can't like describe it in one thing. It depends on the day or the week. Like operations manager and outreach manager are my titles, right? But I also do case management, peer coaching, marketing, all these things, you know, cleaning. Like, it just depends on the day. House? I'm pretty good.
Just kidding.
I just hate it.
Certified cleaner. I don't trust you.
Certified?
I got certified in active addiction. Didn't you were out robbing banks. I was cleaning houses.
Yeah, I still can't believe I did that, honestly. It's like a different person.
I mean, that's, you know, one of the things about recovery, right? Is that it's not necessarily a different person. We just, you know, stop living what addiction forces us to be and start living more who we are, right?
That's well said.
Is it?
Yeah, because like becoming really who weird. You are is difficult. It's beautiful. It's not comfortable, but it's, I don't know. Yeah, that's cool. It's a new perspective.
Yeah, so so you work in recovery.
Yes.
You do a bunch of different things, and it's kind of like a, like, would it be correct to call it like a community center, or is it more?
Exactly.
Okay.
That's exactly what it is. You know, my biggest, what I tell people that are curious, that are either in early recovery or active addiction, is it's a safe place for anybody to come and express their recovery. You know, and when I say that, like, we have, you know, faith-based meetings. We have 12-step meetings. We have Dharma recovery. We have Smart recovery. We even have a Pagans in recovery on Sunday nights. So, like, whatever people's background is, it's not just backgrounds, but however they want to express their recovery and their journey, we're there to, like, empower them. We're there to have their back, you know? And it's not always easy, you know? Working in recovery comes with a lot of challenges. There's a lot of gifts, but there's a lot of challenges. Crisis intervention happens all the time. You're going to see shit that you don't want to ever see. Funerals, a lot of, there's a dark side to it, but the thing that keeps me there is when I can pull a guy, not me, when somebody can pull themselves out of the street and I can watch them go from a detox and rest 30-day program to an IOP to a sober living to being on their feet again, and then they hit me up and want me to come to their graduation or show me their 6-month chip, mm-hmm. That's my shit. That's why I'm here. And yeah. Like, I'll get jaded, you know, very easily, like almost on a daily basis. Just with everything that comes with that. But that's the shit that always pulls me back in, is the stories and the success and the love that I see. Like, through my job, like, yeah, I work there, but it's also like my family. Like, I look at these people with a tremendous amount of respect and love that I really didn't think was possible, you know? 'Cause my first, like, year and a half, I really white-knuckled it.
And what does, for some of our newer listeners, what does white knuckling mean?
It means not doing any fucking inner work or any meetings or therapy or getting a sponsor or all the things that you should be doing. Like, for me, it was, I'm just going to work my ass off and avoid my problems. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to think about, you know, all of the reasons that, like, led me here. You know, because people always say, like, you know, the programs that we work aren't a don't program. It's not like a don't drink, don't get high. They're a do program. Like, you got to do a lot of shit. Like, I think Steve-O said it best on his podcast. Like, I never suffered from, you know, my addiction a day. And I mean, it was horrible. You know, I was a miserable piece of shit. But I didn't suffer from it until I got sober. That's when I was like,
yeah.
Oh, shit, I'm a liar. You know, all the stuff that you don't want to think about yourself, like, you know, you really, really got to take accountability.
Yeah, I remember hearing someone say one time that, you know, my life wasn't terrible when I was drinking and using. It was when I stopped drinking and using that shit got really bad. And so I was like, that might be an indication if. And then, of course, I didn't stay sober for the entire, like, the rest of my life after that. Mm-hmm. I did, you know, end up drinking and using again. And then I remember stopping, white knuckling. And then I was like, oh, I remember texting one of my childhood best friends. And I said to her, I said, at what point in my life did I become the person who, like, was totally fine until I stopped doing drugs and alcohol, and now I'm having problems at work, and I'm having problems with my friends, I'm having problems with everything.
Everything.
It's like, oh, wait, there's inner work that needs to be done.
Inner work's a motherfucker. It's good, though.
Yeah, but seeing, like, people do the inner work on a daily basis sounds like what you get to see, because I know, like, the joy from, like, you know, meeting people when they're new and, like, you know, watching them relapse and then watching them come back and stay sober. And then they go through the exact same thing that made them relapse in the first place. But this time they stay sober. Mm. And, like, that is always so fun to watch. It's like, this is something you used to drink about and now you're not. Now you're like, what can I do now instead? What do I know that can replace this behavior? And, you know, and this isn't my full-time job. I'm not, you know, around it. I just go to meetings, you know, a few times a week and know the few people that I know. But the daily basis, you got to be inundated with cool stories.
Oh, yeah.
Of transformation. And
Yeah. It's the best fucking job I've ever had.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And how long have you had that job?
Going on a year and a half.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So I was hired to do the operations side of things at The Rock, and then it just evolved. Mm-hmm. I'll say it that way, into outreach. So that goes into, like, maintaining relationships that are business development with facilities, like, all across the state and beyond. Like, I met with a guy from North Carolina and Tennessee today. That was a BD rep. And also maintaining relationships, like, in our community. I'm a Rotary member in Canton. Cherokee Collective, Cherokee Focus, like, all the different nonprofits. Mm-hmm. So outreach is, like, my favorite part, because I've always been, like, a extroverted introvert, if that's a thing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You can be a people person, but still be an introvert.
Mm. That's, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So outreach and operations. But my jam, also, my favorite thing is the one-on-one that I can do. You know, when somebody rolls up, like, you know, with whatever story they have, and I saw them when they walked in, broken, and now they're put together. They put themselves back together. Like, that's my jam. Yeah.
And how did you get connected with The Rock and working there? Like, were you originally just going as a person in recovery, or was it always, like...
I was going as a person in recovery. The founder of The Rock actually did some education classes, and, you know, they still do, but it was a behavioral health coach class.
Mm.
And she recommended that I do that, and I still can't tell you the motivation behind that, you know, why I did that. That was a year-long course, like, every Monday for 3 hours.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and I did that, and at the end of it, it was like, all right, cool. And I used to, like, pull up for meetings here and there. I actually was on this show when they did it at The Rock, like, in, I think, like, 22. That was the first time I ever met Christian.
Mm.
And that was, yeah. I wasn't, like, working in recovery then, so, like, my language was all messed up, and I probably said some stuff I shouldn't have said. But, like, yeah, so to answer your question, I showed up as a person in recovery at first, and then, you know, after I just kept showing up, I was offered the position, like, 4 different times.
They're like, we want you, please.
Yeah, yeah. I've known them forever, since I was a kid. Very deeply connected to the people that started that. And, you know, the first 3 times I was like, nah, I don't know. You know, I got this whole, you know, we have our own plans, 3, 5, 7. You know, I wanted to do shit that had nothing to do with recovery. But something hit different on that 4th time. I was like, I felt called,
mm-hmm.
You know, I felt called. So... prayed about it, took it, gave my boss a 4-week notice, because I respected him that much, because I was, like, my first job since I had been home from prison,
mm-hmm.
And he did a lot for me. So, yeah, that's why I took it. Yeah, never thought I'd do it, but I'm doing it.
Here you are a year and a half later. Yeah. Best job you've ever had.
Best fucking job I've ever had.
That's awesome. So what is like your day-to-day look like? As I know you said you listed like four or five different hats you wear there, but as the operations manager, what does your day-to-day look like?
If I'm not meeting with a BD...
What is a BD?
It's a business development representative. Every facility has one. And their job is to, you know, basically maintain relationships in the community for referrals, for clients, to, you know, help people, to, you know, visit people, whether it be in like detox or hospitals, and get them to their facility if they're a good fit for that facility. And they're also professionals in that too. So I'll meet with them, you know, like I met with like five this week. Breakfast, lunch. So if I'm not meeting for breakfast, a day in the life for me, I wake up at about like 5:36. I get my two youngest on the bus, and then I get my oldest son on the bus because he's in middle school. And then I hit the gym. And I have a whole routine that I do there, like with the sauna, cold exposure. And then I'll go into work at about 9:30, 10 o'clock. And it depends. You know, it depends. Like, right now I'm in this like whole fundraising mode and trying to generate income for the 501c3. But I get pulled in a direction, whether it be somebody's mother calling, or, you know, we get calls from the jail all the time. That's another thing that I left out that The Rock does. And I'm going to leave out a lot of stuff, but that's another thing. We get calls constantly from the jail, from men and women, both, that are seeking, you know, either a GARTHOR approved program or sober living. So we'll do that. We'll do that. We'll vet them. We'll go through, you know, people like, you know, hopelink.org. They do a lot of stuff for the community and getting people into treatment. Love those guys. So yeah, like a day in the life is like hard. Like I'll try to like open up, throw on the music, throw on the meditation room, make coffee, clean. But I really just wake up and freestyle it. Like whatever, like right now I have 35 messages on my phone. I'm always behind. That's one thing about recovery. You're always going to be behind on voicemails, texts, and emails. So
you didn't even know I called you last night.
Exactly. See, don't take it personally.
Like, are you still coming tomorrow?
I do it to my own family. I swear. Like, sorry, Dad.
But doesn't everyone do that to their family?
Yeah.
Or did I just out myself?
Yeah. No, you did. You did. But no. So, I mean, I might have like a Zoom call with the Georgia Council of Recovery like I did on Monday, or incarcerations, or, you know, we do a lot of food donations too. So Mondays and Fridays we get food donations, try to, you know, do our best to, you know, put those out into the recovery world, you know, whatever sober living there is, take the overflow to a low income part of Canton. You know, I have a spot, I'm not going to disclose that location, but yes, I mean, it's you know, working at RCO is definitely not for the weak. You know, when I went through my CARES training, which is a certified addiction recovery empowerment specialist. Yeah, it's a whole acronym.
But that doesn't, where's the C?
Certified.
Ah.
Capital C.
Call me slacking.
Capital C.
I can't spell.
No. So when I went, what was I saying? Oh yeah. When I went through that training, it was like an RCO theme, right? So like I got to meet people from RCOs. By the way, there's 37 of them in the state of Georgia. They all have their own niche. Super cool. You can look that up on the Georgia Council Recovery website, but it's you gotta have thick skin. You know, you're gonna get pulled in a lot of directions. You're gonna deal with a lot of, you know, things that the normal person doesn't see. There's a dark side to it, but am I touching the microphone too much? Sorry. No, it's a beautiful thing, man. It's a beautiful thing.
And so that's, you know, something I like that you talked about, like, it's not for the weak, and, you know, it's there is a dark side, because that's something that you hear with a lot of recovery jobs. I know, like, people say, like, if you want to stay sober, don't work in recovery. So what has your experience been like with that, working in recovery and seeing the dark side and the harder stuff to deal with, but still maintaining your recovery? Has that had its own challenges, or has that just been part of it for you?
I think for me, the key is to separate your recovery from your job, right? So like you can get jaded really quick, just like anything in life. Like if you have too much of something, it's like, ugh, it's not special anymore, right? It loses its shine. You know, so I'm surrounded by recovery all day, from the moment I wake up to the moment I go to sleep. So it's easy to get a little jaded, but I separate myself from that. Like, my recovery is my recovery, you know. For the moment, it's really a lot of virtual meetings. I talk to my sponsor, not as much as I should, but I definitely rely on my network. You know, everybody that I kick it with, everybody that I talk to is in recovery. Mm-hmm. So I do a lot of things for myself, whether that be therapy, step work. I think that's the key. Like, and I'm a baby, you know, I've only had like, I'm a baby.
Yeah.
And in the recovery stuff, like, it's only been a year and a half. You know, I know cats that have been doing this for 10 plus years. So they can probably break that down a little bit better than I can. But for me, it's, you got to separate your recovery, your journey from everything else. And you got to set boundaries. Mm-hmm. Like, there's some times where I'll take calls on the weekends and at night. But most of the time after 7 p.m., I'm like, you know, that's my time to play video games with the kids or do whatever, you know, I'm doing. Because it is a 24/7 thing.
Yeah.
Especially like on the business development side of things, like, that never ends. Like, you're going to get calls all day, every day. You know, like, our people are dying out there, you know, and it's not going to stop. So it's hard. You got to have boundaries.
So is that hard to maintain that boundary of like, this is my time, this is my time with my kids. But then it's like, oh, yeah. But if I don't answer, you know, like, people are dying,
yeah.
You know, was that a moral conundrum for you?
Yes and no. Cause like, I don't want to be melodramatic and be like, they're dying, but like, it's true. Like, it's an epidemic and we need everybody that we can. You know, I'll check it. I'll say that. Like, I'll check my voice. Like, I'll peek into my text or voicemails and make sure it's not like a red alert emergency. And yeah. I'll be like, okay, it's fine. Like, it's just that. It's not like life and death.
It's like, oh, this can wait till the morning.
Yeah. And that comes along with boundaries. And I'm still learning that. Yeah. Learning how to navigate that. Yeah.
No, I think, well, you know, like, the important piece of what you had said about, you know, separating your job from your recovery. Because
mm-hmm.
I know, like, what I've seen, because I've seen a lot of people go into recovery and, like, working in recovery and then either leave with their own toe tag or mm-hmm. they, you know, end up going back out and then coming back to try sobriety again. And the common trend with all of them that I've seen is their recovery became their job. And it was like, you know, they take people to meetings. So that's their meeting. They don't have the meetings that they go to anymore. It's just mm-hmm. the meetings that they take people to. And it's still counted as a meeting. Or, you know, they're around recovery all day. So they're in recovery. But it's like, that's still your job.
I'm like, very much guilty of that, too.
I feel like it would be so easy. I feel like I definitely would, too. It's like, oh, well, that counts. I did it today already. You know, like.
Yeah.
I don't know what other example. It's like...
I'll give you an example. It's like, oh, like, I, you know, I don't need to go to the gym today. I worked out yesterday. You know, it's like almost like the same thing to me. Like,
mm-hmm.
that's what I did, though. Like, my first, like, you know, I was super involved in the rock at the beginning. But then I was like, oh, yeah, I've arrived. You know, like, I am enlightened. I don't need my own program anymore.
It's like, you guys pray to me now.
Yeah. And then like halfway through that, I was like, this isn't going to work. You know, and I was the type, not type, I'm not. In my experience, I went to a lot of meetings and, you know, I didn't really think I needed the 12 steps mm-hmm. and a sponsor in that whole program. But then, like, again, halfway through working at The Rock, I was like, this isn't working. Like, I'm losing my fucking mind. And then right. I started doing the steps and the, you know, working with a sponsor. And every time I talk to him, it's like, like the voice of reason. Like, I had no idea how powerful, and I know it's not for everybody, but for me, I need it. Yeah. And I'll probably need it until the day I die.
I mean, if it works for you, it works for you. Like,
yeah,
don't question it.
Yeah. Don't experiment.
Be like, okay, cool. I don't slowly kill myself every day anymore.
Yeah, no, seriously. Like, I'm not trying to like do a plug on the 12 step programs, but it changed my life for sure. For sure. I don't remember what the question was.
It's just about separating work and recovery.
But, yeah.
You know? What are, so I know like you talked about like vaguely with there's the dark side, but you know, what are struggles with your position that causes you to have to keep your recovery on point?
I would say, you know, not everybody's this way, but it can get dysfunctional. I mean, you're dealing with people.
That's the end of the sentence.
Yeah, this is
dealing
like
with people.
You're dealing with people, and people are insane. And sometimes people suck, you know. So, but you know, we try to stay person-centered. You know, like this isn't an addict. This is a person with a behavioral health disorder, with a substance use disorder. They need help. You know, if you were that person, if you had their trauma in their life, that would be you. So I try not to operate out of that, but it is very hard when, you know, because in recovery, like when you do stuff for people, everybody knows, like you'll get taken advantage of. Like you're going to get tried up, you know, like you give somebody one pack of cigarettes, like, hey, what's up with three?
I was just thinking about the cigarettes, you know, it's like if they know you give a cigarette, they're always coming to you for cigarettes.
Yeah. Or like if you sponsor somebody's entry fee into a sober living, they're like, hey, what's up with the next 3 months, like, you know, so you're going to get tried up in different ways, like man, woman, doesn't matter what your position is. If you work in recovery, you're going to get tried up. So that can be annoying. Also the dysfunction of, you know, just different things that happen. Like I've literally driven to the bluffs and pulled people out of psychosis. And I'm proud to do that, but that can, you know, that can give you a little bit of PTSD in a sense. You know, somebody, one of my coworkers told me like early on, are you sure you want to do this? I'm like, yeah, absolutely. And they're like, all right, you better pick a good funeral outfit.
Yeah.
Like you're going to go to a lot of funerals. Like that's this, like you're going to help people, but you know, it's inevitable. It's inevitable.
Yeah. And that's just, you know, being a person in recovery, that's going to be true. If you stay in recovery, you know, that, I remember like, that's the first thing, like when I started going to recovery programs, they were like, well, like, do you have a funeral dress? I'm like,
yeah.
No, I don't wear dresses.
Yeah.
But, you know.
It's just like any other war, though. It's casualties of war.
Yeah.
No matter if you're in the Middle East, Ukraine, or right here in America. Like, and I don't want to be too dramatic, so I'm not going to say it again. But, like, our people need us, you know?
Yeah, and especially, you know, like what you said, you'll have people calling the Rock, you know, who are incarcerated, and you being a person who's had experience with that, you know, it's like, that kind of gives you the qualification to be like, no, like I actually can help you because me too.
I think that's my biggest asset. And I say that without an ego. I think that's my biggest asset. Like I've been in the slums. I've been with the needle in my arm. I've been in chain gang. You know, I grew up in the streets. Like that's who I was, you know? And if I can meet somebody, I can meet people where they're at, you know, people always ask like, what's your talent? That would have to be mine. Like if I had to pick one, which I really don't want to do, that would be it. Like I can meet with, you know, a senior citizen, a 12-year-old kid and everything in between. Like I can relate to almost anybody, especially people that have been there.
And I think, you know, the beautiful thing about, you know, relying on your relatability is knowing when you can't. You know, because for me, like, I want to help every single person that comes in, like, that walks through the door, but I can't help all of them because I can't relate to all of them, like, especially, like, the ones who have been to prison. And it's like my heart goes out to them, and I do care, like, for their recovery. I do care for their journey, but that's not part of my story, so I can't relate to them in the same way that the person next to me can who has been to prison and does know, that, like, the inner workings of that. But then, you know, also knowing that, you know, they're just walking through the door. That's part of their story. It's not part of mine, but I know it's part of hers. And so it's like, here.
See, that's why networks are so important,
exactly.
Right?
You know, networks and resources. You know, sometimes it's like, you know, I can't be the one, but I know who can be. You know, it's like you're coming that's out huge. Of, you know, coming out of jail. Well, you can't come live with me, but.
Boundaries.
Yeah.
I got kids at the house,
motherfucker. I know a resource for you.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like the whole, like the network and personal experience and just like the entire thing, just like packaged up in a pretty little bow that we call John.
Yeah. Or, yeah. Or Sarah.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, it's part time.
That's the beautiful thing about it. Like, the guy that we got to Carter Treatment Center today, like I told him, he was like, thank you so much. And, you know, I can't accept that, you know, like, we're vessels. Like, when somebody tells me thank you, they're like, what can I do for you? Like, I'm going to work and pay it back. I said, bro, the only way you can pay it back is when you get to your mountaintop, whatever that is for you, reach back and pull somebody else. Like, that's how we're going to get it in. That's how we're going to do this.
You,
like,
pay it back by paying it forward.
Yeah. Like, and that's what nobody will tell you about service work or working in this line of work. Like, whether it's facilitating a meeting or having a BD position, like, if you do anything in recovery, like, you're just going to, it's going to fill your tank.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
It's inevitable. You're going to feel better.
Yeah. Especially, like, on the days where it's like, I don't want to do any of it. You know, like, I just want to say, like, I had one of those days recently where I was like, you know what? I haven't had alone time in a while. I just want to stay at home and, like, read a book. Mm. You know, that sounds very sober to do. And I just, like, my conscience was like, no, you told yourself you were going to do something different this morning. And so I went to a meeting and I was like, I really don't want to be here. Mm. But then it was like, there was a person who that was like their very first day in recovery ever. And I was like, ah, and she was sitting right next to me.
See, that's your why. Everybody has a why.
Yeah. Every time I don't want to go to a meeting, you know, it's like, there's either something I need to hear or there's a person I need to help. Mm. And, you know, it was so freely given to me. So now I need to turn around and give to other people. And I think that's the, like, being in that position now where it's like, I'm no longer the one that needs the constant help. Now I can give the help. I think that's been, like, my favorite shift.
There's nothing like that.
Watching the light return to people's eyes.
Somebody said that to me, like, 2 days ago. They were sitting in a meeting, and it was, like, a newcomer. And, like, well, not a newcomer. It was, like, a friend, you know, that she really cares about. And she was like, I saw the life return in her eyes. Mm. And I was like, that's it. That's the shit. That's what I'm talking about. That's what keeps everybody going, I feel like. I'm totally biased, but I think that's the meaning of life. You know, whether it's recovery or not, like, if you can love somebody back to health, whatever that may be.
Yeah.
I think that's it. Because it doesn't matter who you are. You've needed that at some point.
Yeah.
You know? So I feel like when you can reciprocate that, it's like an endless loop of healing and love. I sound like a total hippie, but whatever.
I mean, it's the tie-dye.
Is it?
Yeah.
Sober is sexy, by the way, if you didn't know. Shout out Morgan from Fourth Dimension Apparel. That's the only plug I'll do for the whole show. She makes custom recovery clothing, and it's dope. So check it out.
That's a nice shirt. I might steal it from you after the show.
It's dope.
And so you had mentioned earlier about the person-centered language that you guys use. You know, it's like, instead of being like, you know, you don't say that's an addict, like, that's a person struggling with fill in the blank. Do you think that helps in the sense of, you know, like, when people say, like, that's a sick person, like, you know, instead of, you know, have that same grace for, you know, a person with cancer as you would with a person struggling with addiction?
100%.
So does that help keep that delineation between a sick person versus an asshole?
That's a good question. So the motivation behind that sort of language is to break down the stigma. If, you know, whether you're new to recovery or not, stigma kills, you know, like, our diseases will lie to us. Like, if I had, you know, a setback with opiates, it would be like, oh, don't tell anybody. Don't you dare fucking tell anybody. And then I would probably end up overdosing and dying, right? So that's the stigma, the shame. Like, that's what keeps us trapped. So when you break that down for somebody, it's like, I don't know. I got so many answers for this question. But it's almost, it reminds me of harm reduction, right? Because people, you know, are like, oh, they don't need clean needles or Narcan or any of these things. And it's like, well, yeah, they do, you know? And if you didn't shame them, they wouldn't be using, like, harmfully, like, that we're helping them. So, like, in the same way, when you talk to somebody, whether it be at a meeting or intervention or whatever, if you address them as a person rather than, like, I wouldn't meet somebody that has stage 4 lung cancer and be like, hey, what's up, cancer? You feeling all right today? Like,
I probably would.
That's funny, though. In that way, that's funny. But you get what I'm saying. Like,
yeah.
You wouldn't. No other disease is like that. You know, you're not going to call out and name somebody's disease. Like, no, this person needs something. Like, you know, so the person-centered language, I can't remember all of it, but, like, instead of addict, we say person, you know.
Suffering from
substance use disorders. You know, instead of relapses, we say setbacks. Instead, you know, it's pretty much putting a positive flip on everything. Rather than, like, anything negative that you can think of in recovery, like, the word junkie. Like, we never use that.
Oh, I do. You know? I love that word.
But see, and look, I'm gonna play devil's advocate with myself. Oh, if you can do that.
This will be fun.
So
how many personalities
I've
you get?
Learned like 16. Have you ever seen it? Wait, I can't
is
remember.
Is a psychiatrist that. Here yet?
Yeah. Are they coming? But no, I mean, I play devil's advocate with that, right? So just like how I believe, you know, recovery isn't some cookie cutter thing. People need different things. Mm-hmm. People need therapy. Some people need 12 steps. Some people need MAT, which is medically assisted treatment for you normies out there, Sublocade and things like that. People need different things, man. So, you know, some people need to use that language, alcoholic or addict, mm-hmm. because, you know, and I understand this, and it depends on what room I'm sitting in, if I'm going to say that, right? Like, I have to act accordingly. Like, if I'm, you know, with the Georgia counselor, with these people, I'm going to stay person-centered. If I'm at an event speaking for The Rock, I'll stay person-centered. But if I'm at, like, one of my meetings, I'm going to say, hey, I'm John, and I'm a heroin addict, you know, because what that does for me is if there's a newcomer over there that's 2 days, you know, clean off of, you know, heroin, you know, he's not going to look at me like, oh, that dude has almost 6 years. He's going to look at me like, oh, that dude's a heroin addict too.
Yeah.
Just because I address myself as one. So when you say addict and alcoholic and you're speaking about yourself, you're putting yourself on their level. Mm-hmm. So sometimes that language is needed. Like, I'm not going to tell somebody always speak like this. Just like I wouldn't tell somebody always, you need a faith-based program or you need 12 steps. Like, who the fuck am I? Like, do what works for you. That's what this journey is all about. You're going to learn what you need. You're going to learn what you don't like. Like, this year, for example, I learned that I needed therapy. I learned that I needed a 12-step program. Like,
this is new information.
Is it?
Question. It was a question.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Wow. Well, maybe. Depends on how you look at it. 32.
Wow. I mean, at least you got there.
92, baby. Yeah. Yeah, it is, like, relatively new. Yeah.
That's awesome, though, that you, you know, looked at where you were at, reevaluated, and took different steps. You know, like, as, you know, a person who I fully advocate for, take the path you need to take for your recovery, mm-hmm. you know, because even, you know, when people are like, what you talked about with the harm reduction, I know, like, that's a very controversial topic because it's like, oh, well, now you're telling them it's okay to shoot up. And it's like, no, you know, ideally they won't. However, since they're going to, mm-hmm. you know, I might as well make sure that the needle itself isn't going to be the thing that kills them, you know?
Right. And harm reduction can go in, like, the form of MAT, right? So, like, I'm not going to tell somebody, oh, you definitely need Suboxone or methadone, because, like, that's not true. But if you're the type of person where you going to a methadone clinic or you taking Suboxone for 3, 6, 9 months until you decide to go to treatment, if that's the bridge and that's what keeps you alive, then, dude, I'm all for it. Like, I just want to get on people's level and figure out what they need. And,
yeah.
like, try not to play God at the same time.
Exactly. Because it's for me, you know, and I try to, like, make sure that it's one of those, like, are my preconceived notions going to harm somebody else? Like, it's like, you know, sometimes, like, I'll be in a bad mood and then someone will be like, you know, and, like, when people are like, Suboxone isn't sober. And it's like, okay, for you. But maybe for them it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so it's like catching myself, making sure that I'm not, you know, putting my convictions onto somebody else. But being like, okay, this is what worked for me. Mm-hmm. That's my truth. And something else might be working for another person. And it's something I work very hard, you know, to keep this mindset. And so then when I meet somebody who then makes me feel bad for the path to recovery that I chose, I'm just like, oh, those are fighting words.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I will buck up so fast. It's like, let me not be that person. And so coming across, you know, a place like The Rock where it's like, there's so many kinds of recovery that happen there. And it's like, whatever form of recovery is your jam, that's cool. That's fine. It's welcome here. You know, I feel like that's just not something you hear too often in recovery networks.
It's not, because you'll start a civil war. We almost did with a vending machine. We have a harm reduction vending machine.
Oh, no.
And I will tell you, at first glance, I'm like, fuck yeah, that's the shit. 2 days later, there's like a whole army of triggered people. So I had to rethink this. Like, okay, let's keep the Narcan and this stuff in there, but let's take all the rigs out, you know? So now, you know, we have that in an undisclosed location. If people need it, they know they can hit me up and get it. But I say that to say this, like the harm reduction, the MAT is like so, it's bigger than that. What it really is like there's a divide. You got the OGs, you know, the big bookers and like your mom and dad's like, recovery community that's like, if you're on SSRI, if you're on antidepressant, if you're on anti-anxiety, if you're on ADD, that's not sober.
Yeah, the only sober is raw dog.
It's like, okay, dude, like whatever. Like, you can have a happy medium. You know, you can have both if you're responsible. Yeah. You know, and if you have people around you that you can trust, that's the main thing. Like, you gotta have people around you to hold you accountable. Like, hey, dude, like, you've been on like Suboxone for like a year. It's time to like taper down and like, you know, get somewhere or whatever it may be. It doesn't have to be that. I'm not knocking Suboxone. I'm just saying, like, it's a journey. Get curious, right? Like, mm-hmm. Get curious. Don't crash out, and learn to trust yourself and surround yourself with people that will hold you accountable too and will love you at the same time. Like, that's my mm-hmm. best advice.
And so with, you know, as we come to a close here, you know, with The Rock, with it being a nonprofit, you know, if someone did, you know, someone listening was like, ooh, I really like the sound of that. How can I help? What's the best way for someone to jump in and help with the nonprofit?
I would encourage you to pull up at 126 Barrett Road, Holly Springs, Georgia, or go to betherock.org. So that's our website and our address. Just pull up. We'll give you a tour. There's always somebody there.
And when you say always somebody there.
All right. So 8 a.m. till 8 p.m. Monday through Friday. Let's just say that.
Okay.
And if there's nobody there, like, we'll have a sign on the door with the number, instructions. Like, you know, we try to do that. We try to always keep like an open line of communication. So, yeah. That went by really fast.
And so...
I feel like we didn't even get done with the questions.
If somebody, I mean, you just told people how to find you guys, but you know, how do they help?
Right.
Do you guys need volunteers?
We do. Donations? We need volunteers. We need donations. We need brainstorming with events and fundraising events. Yeah. I didn't answer your question at all. No. So
you're like, we're here physically and here virtually.
Yeah. So yeah, if you want to donate, you can donate multiple ways. And we're always appreciative of that. Like, what we're doing now, we're really trying to build connections in the community. And we're not just asking people for money. We want to know, how can we walk alongside you? How can we serve together? Like, what can we do for you? How can this be?
Partner.
Yeah. Like, we're not just, like, looking for donations. But that is, like, the main thing that The Rock needs right now is community support. It is a recovery community organization. And for a long time... we had a long-standing donor, and to a fault, it almost like enabled us. So we're in like a strange period where we're really trying to get the community support. Like, that's our main initiative right now. So we can continue to serve people. So we can continue to keep our doors open and remain that safe haven for people. And like, shout out to all of our facilitators too. Like, that's my favorite thing about The Rock, is like, we have a solid core group of people that we trust, that we love, that we know are genuine and love that place. So, and you can find the PayPal information on how to donate at, you know, on our website. You can find all of the information that I totally forgot to mention or skipped over at betherock.org. If you want to come and volunteer, we're solid with all surrounding counties for community service, or if you just want to come volunteer and kick it. If you want to start up a meeting, if you're a person in long-term recovery and you want to start up a meeting, hit us up. Like, we're trying to get like 3-4 meetings a day. You know, we're trying to grow. We've only been open since 2020, you know, so on the grand scheme of things, we're still a baby, you know, but, I'm excited. I'm excited because I love everybody that's behind it. I believe in what we're doing in Cherokee County. I'm really excited. So like, really, no. So donations, volunteers, start up new meetings. If you have any ideas on like different events, you know, like, just hit us up, come be a part of, something great. It's good.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining us here tonight. Despite all of our technical difficulties, not pointing any fingers at Chad.
Not at all. It's not anybody's fault.
And thank you to all of the donors and sponsors who make this show possible. Yes, make sure to download the Most High Media app on your phone. Have all the podcast episodes there, documentaries, even the documentary on The Rock.
Rockumentary.
Not the Rockumentary.
So not corny.
And we now, you know, Chad back there has also been busy away in his office doing all sorts of new t-shirts and sweatshirts. So make sure to check out social media and the websites. Hit us up to find out how to get your very own Most High Media merch. And until next time.